Welcome to today's program. It is a segment of our Briefly Focused series, and it's called Navigating Law Firm Life with ADHD. I'm Ala Policastro, CLE advisor for the Beverly Hills Bar Association, and I am delighted to introduce today's speaker, Annie Little. Annie is a real estate lawyer turned ICF certified coach who specializes in supporting lawyers through their job searches, career transitions, ascent to leadership, and career and ADHD coaching. Annie founded JD Nation in 2012 to pursue her vision of a world in which everyone has a fulfilling job, a humane workplace, and a life they're excited to live. Through executive and career coaching, Annie strives to create that world for lawyers by helping them find their ideal job, advocate for themselves at work, and enjoy a life of flexibility and freedom. And Annie, we can't wait to hear what you have to tell us today.
Thank you so much. Let me share my screen and then we can dive right in. Okay, I think it's all set. Okay, so navigating law firm life with ADHD. Thank you for that wonderful intro, Ala. I was a real estate finance lawyer for 7.5 years, and then I founded JD Nation, my lawyer career coaching company, but now I do ADHD coaching as well. And since 2012, I have been a career and ADHD coach to hundreds of lawyers. And I started ADHD coaching a few years ago after I was diagnosed with ADHD in 2021 at the age of 40. It was a bit of a surprise. So here is what we are going to cover today, just so you have a sense of where we're going. But I, like I said, I have ADHD, so this is just a general overview. Sometimes we do a little side quest here and there. So the first thing we're going to talk about is why traditional productivity advice doesn't work for ADHD lawyers and what to do instead. Then we're going to talk about strategies to effectively advocate for workplace accommodations to help you to work with your ADHD and get the most out of your strengths. And then at the end, we are going to identify the features of an ADHD-friendly workplace so you can create one if you're in a position to do so, or find one for yourself. So first things first, let's talk about what the ADHD acronym stands for. It stands for Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder. And it is a misnomer because there is actually an abundance, or I would even say a surplus, of attention in an ADHD brain. So really what's going on is that ADHD is a disorder of regulation in the brain. In particular, the inconsistent ability of the brain to regulate attention or focus attention. And a great way to think about this is this lack of moderation. Or I saw a recent, I don't know if it was an interview or I read something that said, people with ADHD, the ADHD brain is most comfortable in the extremes. I was like, check. So it's very all or nothing. Our brains, our nervous systems are constantly bouncing back and forth between being overstimulated and understimulated. And that leaves us with this very narrow zone of optimal stimulation. Like it's very rare to be right in that middle. And that's why I've shared this image from Danny Donovan about and it was on the last slide as well. You can see in this slide, the brain of a neurotypical person is on dimmer switches. But in the ADHD brain, it's just on, off, on, off. And that is, so like I was saying, there's this very narrow zone of optimal stimulation. Like when you were a kid, did you ever try to balance like an on, off switch, like in the middle, just to see if you could? No? Well, I did. And it doesn't dim the light. You either get like, the light is off, the light is on, or you get this bizarre flickering. That's about right. So it's all or nothing. It's one extreme or the other. With motivation, either we can't start, looks like procrastination, or we can't stop, like we're hyper-focused. A big one that we'll bring up a few times today is time. The ADHD brain views time as what falls into the window of now, and anything outside that window of now is just not now. So kind of out of sight, out of mind. So why are we focusing on lawyers with ADHD? Why is it important for all of us in the legal profession to know about this? And I always say it is important because if you're a lawyer or you work with lawyers, statistically speaking, the odds are that either you or someone you work with has ADHD. And that is because we know that at least one in eight lawyers, or 12.5% of the legal profession, has ADHD. And this is based on a now almost 10-year-old survey from the ABA in 2016. So for reference, that one in eight number, that is 2.5 times the rate of ADHD in the general population. Estimate is that it's about ADHD occurs in about 1 in 20 adults, or about 5%. So, what we know from that mental health survey from 2016 is that that 1 in 8 figure, that 12.5% is a floor for how many lawyers have ADHD. And that's because many lawyers with ADHD are either unwilling to disclose because of fear of stigma, or they don't know that they have ADHD. So if I had been given this survey in 2016, I would have said, no, I don't have ADHD. I very, very much do. So there are a lot of us with ADHD moving around the legal profession, and that's because ADHD brains are well suited to the legal profession. So there are strengths that are inherently part of having an ADHD brain. We're not reframing negatives as positives or anything like that. These are strengths that everybody can have, but they're very common in people who have ADHD. And so I love the iceberg, the strengths iceberg. Like, people think ADHDers are good at talking fast and creativity. Usually, yes, those are true. But beneath the surface, there's all this stuff that we're also really good at, and a lot of people don't realize. So we're excellent problem solvers. We're strategic, big picture thinkers. We can get a lot done in a short period of time if we're interested. If you've ever heard the term hyperfocus, that's what that's about. We're willing to take risks more than the average lawyer. We're very empathetic. We're more optimistic than our peers. And we have, so we just have a lot of things that make us well suited to this profession. We can be really good at it, especially if we're high achievers. One big thing that I found very interesting when I first learned about it is that maybe one of the reasons why so many lawyers are drawn to the legal profession in the first place is because there is a trait among those of us with ADHD where we have a strong sense of justice, or you might hear it referred to as injustice sensitivity or injustice intolerance. And so if you are somebody or know somebody who was like, I can't stand like laws that are unfair, or rules that are unfair, or that are enforced improperly, or this is so unjust, how do I make a difference in this way? For those of us who are high achievers in particular, it's like, oh, I go into the legal profession. That's how I do it. So that was just like fascinating to me. Plus, one feature of having an ADHD brain is that we work really well under pressure, like under time constraints and stress. And that is something that is common with all ADHD brains. We love working under a tight deadline. And then if we're high achievers, a term that I'll bring up later called twice exceptional, meaning you're a high achiever and you have ADHD, you're particularly eager for the challenge of becoming a lawyer and doing what a lawyer does. But what we're going to be talking about today is how that ADHD brains operate differently in the workplace. They can be just as successful as anyone else, but ADHD brains aren't better, they're not worse, but the differences from neurotypical brains can be consequential at times. Just like our brain, an ADHD brain is often faster than a neurotypical's, but I love this example, this real life example of how in 1953 this fighter jet was so fast that it shot itself because it was faster than its own bullet. And I'm like, yeah, that sounds like, yeah, that tracks. So you came here today probably to find out what's up with the productivity strategies, because if you have ADHD, you probably know that they don't usually work for us in the same way, or maybe they work for a very short period of time. So why don't they work? So just a little tiny bit of background on how ADHD works in the brain. There's a different webinar I did that goes into more detail about how to understand ADHD. So this is a very, very high level thing. but I'm going to reference my favorite researcher, Dr. Russell Barkley. And he has characterized ADHD as it's not a disorder of not knowing what needs to be done, but rather one of not doing what we know needs to be done. All right. So, in other words, ADHD brains, people with ADHD, we know what to do. Like, if something's important, like this needs to be done. But the problem comes in executing on that knowledge. That's the problem. And it's extremely frustrating for everyone involved because we've got people, who work with us being like, this is really important. You need to get this done. It's like, I know, I know, I know. It's so important. I'm telling myself it's so important. And it's like, why can't I do it? Why can't I just execute and get it done? So everybody's really frustrated. And what's at the root of it is this. There are a few neurotransmitters, but the main one that we're used to hearing about is dopamine. And dopamine regulates attention. And we know from the very beginning of today's presentation that the ADHD brain is not great at regulating. There's no moderation, and in particular, not great at regulating attention. Well, great. So dopamine's responsible for that. And it's what delivers the messages from the knowing part of the brain, which is up in the prefrontal cortex, to the doing part of the brain, which is way in the back. So literally, dopamine transmits the messages from our knowing part of the brain to the doing part. And when that is out of whack, there's a disconnect. Whereas in a neurotypical brain, that's not a problem. So a shortcut to remembering this is to do something requires dopamine. Knowing we've got the doing requires dopamine. And because the dopamine delivery system in ADHD brains is different, we need to have a different approach to make sure that it functions optimally. All right. And there's a lot of stuff out there about dopamine being like this feel-good thing or having like dopamine chasing, whatever. Dopamine is responsible for motivation. Okay. Motivation, alertness, focus. I don't know about the feel-good stuff. Because when it, I can assure you, when I'm on medication and I'm, getting a better dopamine delivery system, I don't feel any better. I just feel like I can do more things. But there's a lot going on. It's very complicated because it's not just producing dopamine or delivering dopamine or absorbing dopamine. It's all of those things. Okay, so there's a lot going on. So what we're going to talk about today, these are some approaches to try, and you may try them at different times in different circumstances. They may work sometimes and not others. That is normal. It's very complicated. Bottom line, we cannot motivate an ADHD brain to be productive using the same strategies that are used for neurotypical brains to be productive. And that is because of the difference in the type of nervous system, brain, dopamine delivery systems for each of these two types of brains. So neurotypical brains are motivated by things that are important-based dopamine triggers. So if you're neurotypical, if something's important to you, you'll make sure that you get it done. If it's important to others who are important to you, like a boss or a partner or family member, you will also be able to get that done. If there's an anticipated reward, you'll do it. If there's avoidance of negative consequences by doing it, that's also enough for the dopamine to fire properly in your brain. But in the ADHD brain, it's not wired for importance. And that's really important to understand. We know that it's important, so why can't we do it? The research has shown us that ADHD brains are motivated by interest-based triggers. So to motivate an ADHD brain, there are four main levers we can pull. It's something that is interesting or fun. Now, this is very subjective, so this varies from person to person. Talk about highly frustrating, right? But if it's interesting or fun, we can find the motivation that will produce dopamine. All of a sudden, it's like we've found the motivation to do it. If something is like a fun, like a good challenge, like not too challenging or not too hard, we love a challenge, or like a competition, like a game. Things that are novel, like new to us, that's also something that can help us. We can become an expert on a new legal topic. That was always something that I was able to do pretty easily. And things, of course, that are urgent. I mentioned that earlier. So working under pressure, that gets the dopamine going and functioning properly and absorbing and all that kind of good stuff. Although I will say, it often requires medication. It's this helps, but like this combined with medication and other sorts of behavioral strategies are really the way. So, no interest-based triggers. If we don't have something that's interest-based, there's not going to be a function of doing for an ADHD brain. Okay. Now, if you're neurotypical, I'm there. I'm with you. You're thinking, nice. I also prefer to do things that are interesting or fun over things that are not, but are important. And I would love to just only do things that are interesting or whatever, but if it's important, I just get it done. And I love that. Super love that journey for you. I wish that were my journey as well. But instead, I can sit here and be like, this is so important. I need to do it. I need to do it. And I'm like, I want to do it. I want to do it. And I can't. And it's so insane. So at the same time, interest-based triggers, they also work for neurotypical brains. They also make your job easier to do, more fun to do. It makes that execution part so much easier. So those are nice to have. Use them. Those are like productivity hacks for you. But for ADHD brains, the interest-based triggers are must-haves. If we don't have them, we don't have the execution that we need. Okay. So I'm going to relatively quickly run through the unhelpful productivity strategies that don't work for ADHD lawyers, even though they are perfectly fine for everyone else. So eat the frog first, meaning start with your most dreaded task, right? The frog being the worst task. Well, if we have zero motivation in our ADHD brain to begin with, because it's a task that we don't want to do for all of these reasons that are listed in this image, we're not going to get motivation by trying to do it more. We will instead spend potentially the entire day trying to get that dreaded task done. And we won't be able to get anything else done in the meantime. And so we're just beating ourselves up, like, why can't you just do this? It's going to take 5 minutes, just get it done. And then it turns into this shame spiral and our wheels spin. And in the end, nothing happens. So eating the frog first, if that doesn't work for you and you have ADHD, it's not you. It's not good for your brain. And in the next section, we'll talk about what will work better. But we're just going to run through these why they don't work first, because they're probably going to ring a bell. Oh, yes, for time management and things. Just use a planner. Just schedule your day out in advance and then stick to it. Sounds simple enough, right? Ugh, that does not jibe with how the ADHD brain works. First of all, the ADHD brain is terrible at estimating how long everyday tasks take to complete. So planning out how long to give yourself to do things, that's a problem. Sometimes a planner where you, and if you're setting a schedule and you are just supposed to stick to it no matter what, feels like a prison, and we will rebel against that prison because that is an ex you know that's just like too much. No, we do need some structure to stay out of chaos, but we're going to rebel against anything that feels like a prison. And then let's say we are unable to stick to the schedule that we set for whatever reason, then we're like, oh, well, either I'm sticking to my schedule or I'm throwing my schedule out the window. I can't stick to it today. It's all gone. Right? Another big one is we forget to look at it. This is especially true for electronic planners. Forget to look at it. If it's a physical one, we might lose it or also forget to, we just forget that we have it. And so ultimately it becomes like this thing that's like there and just judging us for not doing better. Because we want nothing more than to be consistent, but it's literally impossible for the ADHD brain. Our goal is persistence rather than consistency. So a planner, it can work for a while, but ultimately it doesn't work long term for most people with ADHD. This one, again, a lot of these things are like really good advice, right? Do what's most important and urgent, okay? Because for people with ADHD, we're just kind of hopping to like the next urgent task because we are terrible at prioritizing things. That is something the ADHD brain struggles with because, hear it? Our brains function on what is interesting, not on what is important. So to us, if it's interesting, that means important, right? Because if it's not important, it's not going to get our attention. If it's only important, it's not going to get our attention. So if you have ADHD and you had trouble with highlighting your books, I had that happen to me all the time. I'm like, but it's important to know, right? Interesting. So if someone tells me to use an Eisenhower matrix, I'm like, yes, this is awesome. And then everything ends up in the important column. It's just a difference of what's urgent versus not urgent, but there's too much in the importance column. So that's not super helpful advice for us either. And then the all-time favorite, just try harder. We are trying so wildly hard. We really, really are. So anytime someone tells us just focus or just do it anyway, or just power through, muscle through, you can do it. Sometimes we can hijack our stress response. That's generally how most of us who were undiagnosed and lawyers got through it. Get the cortisol, get the adrenaline. But I'm here to tell you, with a lifelong anxiety disorder, that system degrades over time until it stops working at all. So that might be working for you in times. That's not what you need to rely on forever, and you won't be able to, because this is something that happens at the neurobiological level. This is similar. I mean, dopamine is a neurotransmitter, is just a fancy name for a hormone that's in the brain. Like, so telling someone to just focus more, it's similar to saying, like, just regulate your insulin production more to a diabetic. Insulin's also a hormone. So that's how hard it is for us, because we are trying wicked hard and we still can't do what we want to do. So that's why some of those most, there are others, but those are the most common ones that will come up, like in a law firm, right? So what, here are some ADHD informed productivity strategies, ones that are addressing the interest-based nature of the ADHD brain. So eat the frog second. I'm not saying, like, don't do that dreaded task. It needs to get done. You know it's important, but you need to get dopamine first before, because that doing that task or some perceived accomplishment of doing that task or avoidance of consequence, that's too far in the future to deliver dopamine. That's outside the window of now. That's in the not now. We're not feeling that. So there's nothing that says you cannot do something that will give you dopamine and then ride the resulting wave of that dopamine into the dreaded task. In fact, that's sometimes the only thing we can do. So if you have ADHD, the important thing is to find out what sorts of things give you a dopamine boost. Oh, and lest I forget the most important part of this strategy, you need to set a timer, because if you're doing something that generates dopamine for you, it might be hard for you to stop. So I love this graphic from Coaching with Brooke. She is a ICF certified ADHD coach as well. So you're just going to have to do some, like, experimenting to know, like, what reliably will give you dopamine. And listen, if you try one day and you're like, oh, this doesn't work, just go to one of the other ones. Or you've got your own sort of thing, like, you know, like when you need, like, a pick me up or something. So for me, sometimes I have some, like, dopamine factory songs, playlists that I know if I put it on, I'm gonna feel it. Especially if you put on headphones and it's binaural, you know, the music that goes between speakers, that, like, literally tickles the ADHD brain. So then you can tackle that task. So that whole thing of, like, do this first and then you can do the thing you want to do. We have to eat our dessert first. Maybe not the whole dessert first, but we have to do that first so that we can have the ability to do what we're supposed to do. And in terms of, like, time management and scheduling and all of that, planning, we want to do it. But what's most important is that you use a system that actually works for you, because that's the system you're going to actually use. I know that sounds kind of silly, but find what works for you right now, understanding that it may not work forever. It probably won't. That's what I tell my clients. I'm like, this is amazing. And I want you to know that if it ever stops working, please tell me. Don't hide. It's probably not even your fault that it's not working anymore. Let's figure out if it's just you need to pick up the planner again, or if we need a totally different system here. Okay. So what's important for ADHD brains is to find a system that has this appropriate balance of structure and flexibility, right? And finding out what is going to do that for you is very individualized, and something that it's one of my favorite things to do with my ADHD clients. It's so rewarding for both of us when we find it, when we figure something out. Okay. Now, in terms of prioritization, I know this sounds kind of silly, but we really do have a hard time prioritizing. But this graphic, again, by Danny Donovan is so wonderful. Like, what's not important versus important? If that's not how your brain is wired, it's kind of a guessing game. So you've got to ask. You need to ask somebody for clarification, whether it's the person who gave you an assignment or a client or whatever. And you don't have to say, "Oh, I'm terrible at prioritizing." In fact, don't say that, because we can learn to prioritize, like when we have similar projects, right? We learn. We learn. But ask for clarification, and there are a couple ways to do that. You can say, "Great, on it, happy to do this project. So what's the most important thing that I should do? Like, what's the priority here?" Or I have all these, this is something I did as a lawyer all the time, as a young lawyer, when many partners would give me things to do, right? I'd be like, "Okay, given that I have these other projects, how should I prioritize yours?" Like, that's amazing, right? Like, and that's something that you can do. I mean, it's amazing because I was doing that before I knew, right? But it's a great way to get somebody else's input without being like, "I don't know how to prioritize this. I would like to defer to you instead." And then something that's a subset of prioritization is what's called ordination. And that's like, in what order should I complete tasks? So if somebody says, "This is the priority," and either it's a multi-step thing that you need to like know the order in which to do that subtask, or if it's a big project, it's like, "Okay, so you're telling me to do that first. Can you tell me what comes next? Like, in what order should I do these? How should I prioritize the order of these tasks?" Because that, especially if you have an ADHD brain, that's really one of your strengths is looking at the big picture and being able to find and make connections between things, especially things that other people won't. Like, that is key to being able to understand the order in which things are done, the priorities, so you don't get off track, and B, it's going to actually really help to inform your problem solving as you go, because you're going to be doing it in the order that it needs to be done. So ask somebody, anybody who might have who has a sense of what the priority would be. Otherwise, I put in the resources slide at the end. There is something called the iPrioritizer. You can just Google it. It's like at ideasandbox.com. And you basically put in a brain dump and it will walk you through steps to help you prioritize. There's also some great custom GPTs out there. You need to find a custom one. And I think I have one that's like ADHD task man or task something. And it lets me do a brain dump. And I do it, I talk into my microphone. I'm a verbal processor, so I just talk it out, all my feelings about it and everything. And it gives me like an ordered list and coaching on how to be like, "You can totally do this. I know it's hard, but once you do this, then it'll make sense to do that." So there are tools. That said, the best thing is to just ask a human who has information about what you're doing. And then, rather than just trying harder, because we're already trying so hard, we really are, you need to try differently. Okay. And the only way you can try differently is by understanding and truly accepting how your brain works. So you're probably picking up on a little bit of a theme here. It's understanding your brain. Each person's brain is different, yes. And when it comes to ADHD brains, there are like over 200 symptoms and traits, and everybody experiences them differently and in different intensities and in different contexts. Okay. So when you might hear the term like unmasking, like in this graphic, it's basically like, instead of just like muscling through, even though you're absolutely stressed, overwhelmed, freaking out on the inside, but you're maintaining calm and working through it. Really, if you just say like, "I am freaking out, I need like 10 minutes to recharge," that's trying differently. Okay. Also, we put a lot of time and energy into masking our ADHD stuff. And so it's going to free up some of that mental space so that that's also going to help you to do your job better. Okay. So those are just, again, some suggestions, some starting points. So let's talk about some helpful workplace accommodations for people with ADHD, well, lawyers with ADHD in particular. And there is actually some specific guidance on that that we will get to from like the government. Okay. So before we get in this big caveat, it's very important to know you do not need to have or disclose an ADHD diagnosis to request accommodations. In fact, you don't even need to have ADHD to make an accommodation or to make a request. This is really just asking for support where you need it to do your job better. This isn't, and I say that in particular because people will be like, well, if you need these accommodations, then you shouldn't have this job. Oh, no, no. Let me tell you, when I tell you, I work one-on-one with ADHD lawyers, most of them are partners. The majority of them are also equity partners, and they are wildly successful. Okay, so the accommodations are there to make things more effective, more efficient, free, and like less stressful for everybody involved. Okay, so everybody, you don't need to say you have ADHD. You don't need to have a diagnosis. You don't even need to have ADHD. So here are some accommodations. I start with this one because it's the one that is least known by most people. And it's body doubling, kind of a funny word. You might also hear it called mirroring. I will sometimes say co-working as well. But this is something that helps with task initiation, starting a task. Maybe it's a dreaded task. Maybe it's just starting in general. Some people might call this procrastination. However, procrastination is intentionally not doing something, being like, I don't want to do that, so I'm not going to. Task initiation, struggling with that is being, I want to do this, I need to do this, and I can't, and I'm struggling. How do I start this? This is my number one most problematic ADHD symptom. So the funny thing about this is there's been a lot of research on it, but we're still not exactly sure why it works so well. We just know that it does. So there are options for you if you want to give this a try, or maybe you can even think back to scenarios where doing something with somebody else, even if it's different from what you're doing, helps you to stay on task. For some people, this is with ADHD, this is why going to the gym is, or going to a class at a gym is more, makes them more consistent with their fitness rather than working out on their own. So it applies in many contexts, but from the work perspective at a law firm, if you have the ability to do this in person, you can just do this, reserve a conference room. Maybe there's a co-working space where you can meet people. You can just do it in somebody's office where there's like a table where someone else can sit. You just need a co-working buddy. They don't have to have ADHD, okay? But I mean, and you don't have to be working on the same thing, but it's just like, I've got stuff I need to get done and I'm struggling. Usually it's admin type tasks, right? And so you can have like a recurring time and day that you do with somebody, or you can just have somebody who's on call, multiple people, whatever the case may be. And if you're unable to do this in person, there are virtual options. My favorite, the one that I've actually tried and used and like, is called FocusMate. And you can use it for free for like a few times a month, but the subscription isn't that much. And I cannot tell you how many people I've met, not only who have ADHD on FocusMate, but ADHD lawyers or ADHD former lawyers. And many of them report that the FocusMate and body doubling in general has been their most effective intervention. So not sure why it works. It's almost like, sometimes I think of it as like, oh, somebody else is on task, I can do that too. So like almost like a competition, it's almost like a challenge, but it's, you know, it's got the right balance of structure because somebody else is working, you're like, oh, I should be working too, but there's no micromanaging going on, right? So who knows? It could also be a form of co-regulation. You know, if you're working with somebody who's just doing stuff in a calm way, that's going to affect our nervous systems in a positive way. So body doubling for the win. Written instructions. This is something that helps with the working memory limits that are inherent in an ADHD brain. And again, you can refer to other presentations on ADHD for details on that. But a way to think about it is the working memory is, it's the information that our brain retrieves or gains from learning and puts it all out. I think of it as like the kitchen island. So it's all out there while you're making something, right? It's so that you can reach it easily, put it back, but you're not necessarily putting it away or retrieving it from far away. It's all out. So a neurotypical brain's working memory limit is like, you can visualize it as the size of like a kitchen island, a big one. Whereas the working memory limits of an ADHD brain is like that little side table behind next to my couch, like a little drink table. That's how big the working memory limits are. So this can affect how we retain verbal instructions. Also as a fun benefit, at least 50% of people with ADHD have some sort of auditory processing issue. Me also. So you can request instruct like getting instructions in writing rather than verbal instructions, or both, or we'll get into that a little bit more later too. You can ask that meetings be recorded. This is super easy with Zoom meetings, right? Not only can they record them, but they spit out transcripts and even summaries that are pretty decent now. But this in some law firms, this is standard that every phone call, like conference call, everything is recorded and then transcribed for everybody and then circulated afterwards. That doesn't mean you have to do that or that you can do that, whatever. But another way to do it is, you know, if you're listening to instructions and you take notes, then you can send an email to confirm your understanding with the person who gave them to you. All right, modified feedback. This blew my mind a little bit because I learned about this, I mean, in a lot of ways, but one is in the guidance, I think, in the Department of Labor, which I'll show you in a minute. And it's like thing accommodations for, you know, mental health conditions or something. But so it didn't say this was specifically for rejection sensitive dysphoria, but here's what we're going to talk about here. RSD, rejection sensitive dysphoria, is very common in the neurodivergent community. So not just with people with ADHD, but autism and others, okay? And it's basically extreme reactions to perceived criticism of any degree. So completely like this thing, completely normal constructive criticism, which also people with ADHD, we love feedback. But it's like feedback on this lease I drafted. Oh my gosh, look how marked up it is. Oh my God, they must think I'm so stupid. They're gonna fire me. They're gonna fire me. I'm fired. Like I have to find a new job. That's what RSD does to us, okay? So there are ways that accommodations that people you can request, you know, there are examples out there of how to implement, but basically it's adjusting the timing of how feedback is provided and the way. The mode of delivery for the feedback. So, in most situations for myself, when I was practicing, like annual reviews or semi-annual reviews were done in person. You know, I would sit down and there'd be like two or three partners and they would provide feedback. And that was great. I liked hearing a lot of the stuff. They did the good sandwich stuff, like good, negative, good. But the negative part, I would just get total, like, I could no longer process what was happening. Because I was like, oh my God, oh my God, are they going to just tell me that like they're going to decrease my salary? They're going to fire me. They're putting me on a performance plan. Like, I just completely derail and then I don't hear the rest of the conversation. So instead, you could say, like, could you provide me like with the outline, like the written outline of what we're going to be covering in this so I can make sure that I'm prepared and I can process in there? Because that's really helpful as opposed to like, you know, if somebody they buzz you to come in, they buzz you on the phone and they're like, come into my office. And you're like, I'm panicking. I'm panicking. You know, if instead it's like, could you maybe like shoot me an email that says, hey, are you available to meet, you know, in 20 minutes? That gives me more time to process. And then I don't feel like I'm in trouble. So things like that. And then the content of the feedback, it's important to, that it focuses on strengths rather than weaknesses. So you know, this isn't so that, you know, if you're providing feedback, you're not telling people where there's room for improvement, but improvement of weaknesses is kind of not a thing. We'll get to that in a little bit too. But improving on strengths, there's a huge ROI for that. So it's more about finding like, how can we use your strengths? How can we leverage your strengths to either improve your performance in this way, or maybe we just need to like, divvy this stuff up differently, and those types of tasks go to someone else, and then we prioritize giving these types of matters to you because it fits with your strengths. Flexible schedule can be an accommodation for someone with ADHD because many of us have a delayed sleep phase. So melatonin production happens later, and that means the effect of it is felt until later too. This was so validating for me. When I learned about this, because I am like, I will be forever a night owl. I even take melatonin at like 7 at night, and I'm lucky if I'm asleep by midnight. So, having a later start to the workday and a later end to the workday for somebody with ADHD who happens to have this melatonin effect, it's going to make it so that when the person is at work, they're going to be on. Because I worked people who showed up at the office at like 7 a.m. And so I was like, okay, I guess I'll try to show up at 7 a.m. I was worthless. I was worthless. I could not, literally could not keep my eyes open. I couldn't do anything till 10 a.m. anyway. So something to consider. Also important meeting times, things that are at first thing in the morning. Is it possible to let people like me call in, like, or be on Zoom for those? Or can we adjust those important meetings to be no earlier than 10 in the morning so that I, if you need me in the office type thing. And remote work can also help with this. But this helps with some, again, this is all stuff that's in our brain that we, there's not a whole lot we can do to change it. I would love to be a morning person. I cannot. I have tried. I cannot. Another great accommodation is utilizing Do Not Disturb. And I know everyone says, like, you can use Do Not Disturb, but this is like really important and it requires some solid communication with the people you work with to make it happen. And this is so important because it limits cognitive task switching. And this is true for everyone, but transitions, interruptions are particularly challenging for the ADHD brain to recover from. And so when we're switching tasks, we often will think of it's like, okay, so I just got interrupted, so or I need to change tasks. I'm working on this and now I'm going to go work on that. That's just like one cognitive step. At most, maybe it's two. Like I'm stopping this task, I'm starting that one. Surprise, it's actually four cognitive steps. Your brain, from your brain's perspective, it has to go through four different steps to switch tasks. And you can get interrupted during those tasks of getting refocused again because you have to stop what you're doing, you have to switch your focus, then you have to start the new thing that you want to focus on, and then you actually have to focus on it. So the interruption, like the sabotage is real, right? Interruptions sabotage productivity for everyone, but in particular, people with ADHD really are at a disadvantage here. So if you are, and this may not be true for everyone with ADHD, but let's say you are somebody who works really well with extended periods of time without interruption, right? Like at least 2 hours. Because sometimes it takes, you know, it takes a little bit for us to get into to initiate a task anyway. So an hour might only be like 40 minutes of productivity time for us. But you can't expect everyone to honor you every time you go into Do Not Disturb, especially if you're doing it a lot, right? This is something where, and you know, people will, they'll interrupt anyway. So having conversations about this is really important to me. This is really helpful, you know, but I want to talk about how we can implement this in a way that works for all of us so that we know, like, if you know, there are certain things that are just going to need to be an interruption, but anything short of that, you can let me be. Are there certain times of day, certain days of the week? Like, you know, how can we best do this? Right. And that way everybody can respect what's going on in that situation. And then the last helpful accommodation that I'll talk to before we talk about advocating for them is managing external stressors. These, like, so external stressors are basically anything besides what we've talked about, but that, like, you can think of it more as like sensory stimuli in a sense. So this picture of a neurotypical versus an ADHD brain just sums it right up. The ADHD brain has trouble regulating attention, meaning there's no filter there. So our attention is on everything. There is, it all gets in. Whereas a neurotypical brain is able to divert attention away and only put it on things that are important. We don't have that filter with ADHD. So this is why we can be hypersensitive to lighting, noises. I have misophonia, actually. It's super bad. As a leaf blower is just starting outside, struggling to focus. Stress is also like anxiety, just things that are annoying. And irritations, think about like clothing irritations or like the way a chair squeaks or doesn't fit quite right. So managing these external stressors is really important. So, like if lighting is really problematic for you know, figuring out what type of lighting would work better. Is it like you need to just not use the overhead lights and bring in a lamp from home? Or is it just you need a dimmer or whatever? But again, this is something that's going to be very individualized. But when it comes to like lighting, noises, irritations, stress is more personal. Like, highly recommend therapy, prioritizing sleep and maintaining boundaries where you can. That's the best stuff for stress. All right, so if those are some examples of accommodations. There's the universe of accommodations in the workplace are unlimited, okay? It's unlimited. So, regardless of whether any of those accommodations I just talked about are ones you want to pursue, how do you advocate for getting them? That's the next thing people kind of, they're like, well, but how am I supposed to ask for that? You're like, they're never, I'm not, no one's going to give that to me, or I can't ask for that. Okay, well, you're just advocating for yourself here. And as a lawyer, you're an advocate. So here's how you can best advocate for yourself in these situations where you're just trying to do your job better. So there are four steps. The first is to understand how you work best. That's kind of what we've been talking about so far. Identify your external stressors. Those are like the sensory stimuli that we just covered, the lighting, sounds, that. So once you, because nobody else can know, how you work best or what derails you from a stimulation perspective, you've got to get that stuff figured out and also understand based on what you know from your work history, like when are you working at your best? Like what conditions are present? Then you can communicate those needs to whomever needs to know and can help you, right? And then the next step is to collaborate with those people to find a solution. This is not a demand situation. This is going to require some collaboration. So understand how you work best. Generally, you want to know what your strengths are. Like, and here's just like a smattering of the ADHD strengths. So knowing where, what you're really good at, what conditions do you need in order to leverage those strengths? Do you need to add something? Do you need to remove something like the leaf blower that's outside, or modify something? Okay. That's kind of what you want to be asking yourself when you're thinking about, oh, I'm really, really good at, novel problem solving, but I get really derailed when I don't have the big picture, when I don't know the nuts and bolts of the things that are going on behind the scenes. I can't unleash my power of connecting the dots and finding patterns if I don't know the universe of dots. So this is something that as a person with ADHD, or if you're neurotypical and you also want accommodations, this is the framework, right? Understand the conditions under which you work best. And based on your current situation, what do you need to add, remove, or modify in order to make that happen more consistently? It's not going to be always, right? Two, identify the external stressors. So what interferes with your, so let's say you're saying like, oh, I work better when I have, clearer deadlines. Great. Let's say you've got clear deadlines, someone's helped you prioritize, but you're still not able to do your best work. What else is interfering there? Is it interruptions? Is it the lighting? Is it the sounds that are derailing you? Is there something you can do? Can you get noise canceling headphones? Maybe it's just noise reducing earplugs. I don't have mine here. I had the because I would put one in. It just filters out the frequencies that are upsetting. Is it having somebody call you on the phone to give you feedback when an email would save you so much stress? That's what we're talking about for here. So understand how you work best, what you need for that. When you have all that stuff, what else can potentially derail you? And then taking that information and communicating it to someone who's in a position to either help you or you would need to inform them of these changes that you're hoping to make. And again, you do not need to disclose your ADHD or any diagnosis or anything like that. Anybody can use that, do this. And the key is that we're framing this in terms of I've found that I work best when. So you're saying, like, I've got data on this, I've got experience, here's where I work best, and I'm finding that this is preventing me from working at my best. So this is not a situation of saying, like, I miss deadlines because of my ADHD, or you can't interrupt me because I have ADHD and it's going to derail everything. I mean, that's definitely how I feel for sure. And I definitely say that to my kids. Okay, I do. And it's not fair. But you're saying the same thing in a way that's more productive and constructive, right? So saying, like, I found I work best when I have multiple shorter deadlines rather than one distant deadline. Can we break this long-term project up into steps and set shorter-term deadlines? Because that's where I really excel. And then the subtext for me is like, it's also going to help me prioritize. It's going to help me to know what to do, when to do what and in what order. And then the last step is collaborate to find a solution. You're going to get so much further if you just have the mindset of this being the opening of a negotiation. You know, negotiations are going to get you so much further than demands. And I've honestly not come across any lawyers with ADHD who are like, I'm going to demand this. It's very much the difference. Like, ooh, should I even? I'm too nervous to even ask. And part of that fear may come from the fact that there's no requirement that the employer or the person you're working with has to say yes. You know, that's why when you hear the term like reasonable accommodation, that's the reasonableness. Accommodations need to work for everyone involved. So here's an example of what that could look like. So let's say, let's rewind the time machine. And I know I have ADHD back when I'm a real estate finance lawyer. And I say, hey, listen, boss, I have learned the hard way that I work faster and I make fewer mistakes and I don't need to ask you as many questions when I have written instructions as opposed to only getting them verbally from you and taking notes. Would it be possible for you to put my assignments in writing as well to help, you know, eliminate those issues that I'm finding I have? And so let's just kind of flip it a little bit. Let's pretend that somebody comes to me, also Annie with ADHD, and asks that, makes that request of me. I would not be able to honor that request because of my ADHD brain. So here's how this could go. You'd say, ah, yes, Associate Annie, I can see how that would be super helpful for you and for me ultimately, right? Unfortunately, what you've proposed is it's untenable for me to put everything in writing. I'm a verbal processor myself, so explaining it to you in words is the fastest, most effective way for me to do that. However, I would be okay with you recording, like on your phone, our conversations where I'm giving you instructions, and then you can get it transcribed by AI, or you can listen back and type it up and write it down for yourself. I'm totally fine with you recording me. And or if you don't want to record, or if you do, or you just want to take notes, I will prioritize emails from you where you are seeking confirmation of your understanding of the instructions. You can just put it in email, be like, just double checking, this is how I understand the assignment. And I'll be like, yes, that is correct. Or I'll say, oh, this thing, add this to it. So, and then be like, so how do you feel about trying that? And so there's a little bit of back and forth, and then just trying it. You know, and sometimes you ask for something that you think is going to work and it kind of doesn't. So you got to like recalibrate. All right. Now, if you need ideas, here are some. These are from the UK. I just liked the graphic. I thought it was nice to kind of see that. And then there are some other resources, the askjan.org, the EEOC, Reasonable Accommodations for Lawyers with Disabilities. Heck yes. Just Google it. Last time I checked, these are they're still on the government websites. And then the Department of Labor also has the one accommodations for employees with mental health conditions. That's the one that has stuff that's great for people with RSD or anxiety. And as you'll go through these, you know, they're not saying, oh, this lawyer has ADHD, you know, in the EEOC one. But reading between the lines, you're like, oh, dude, this person totally has auditory processing and ADHD. I love it. All right. So that is also listed on the resource page, but that's why I don't put the full link because it's just nuts. And you can, if they do take it off the government website for some reason, you should be able to find like archived versions just by Googling those exact words. Okay. All right. So how do we create or identify if we're not in a position to create ADHD friendly workplaces? Three main things to look for. Whether you're seeking something or you're aiming to improve your current workplace, you want to encourage, want to see that there's encouragement of dialogue regarding support needs with all employees, not just those with disabilities or neurodivergence. It's like, hey, you need something to do your job better? We're open to it. Let's talk. And the next is a focus within the company culture on leveraging strengths, not harping on weaknesses. And then the last point we'll talk about is the normalization of the need to recalibrate systems and accommodations. Like I just said, sometimes you'll ask for something, you'll get the accommodation, and you're like, oh God, this actually isn't helping as much as I thought. So the normalization of that is that you're gonna feel welcome as an ADHDer there. So when we're saying support all employees, this is super important because it reduces the stigma felt by ADHD employees in particular. When everyone's encouraged to advocate for themselves, nobody feels singled out, right? It also minimizes resentment among neurotypical employees, right? Like the, well, I'd love to do things that are fun and interesting too, but I just do it if it's important, right? Well, there are other things that you may need accommodations for if you're neurotypical. So when everyone is granted reasonable accommodations to help them do their jobs more effectively and with less stress, it further reduces the stigma for people with disabilities or neurodivergence who may feel like they can't ask or they don't want to ask because it's going to make them stick out and they might have a target on them. And ultimately, when there's a workplace, a law firm that takes into consideration the needs of all of its employees, it increases the productivity of everyone and the well-being of everyone. So when you can see that sort of thing happening, boom, ADHD-friendly workplace. The focus on strengths, we've talked about this a little bit before, but there have been studies, and Gallup is the big one, where it shows that the ROI for employers on focusing on maximizing strengths as opposed to improving weaknesses, it's like out of control. And in particular, in terms of employee engagement. So when you're focusing on your lawyer's strengths and finding ways to use them in more ways and leverage them and maximize them, it increases ADHD lawyers' overall engagement at work and neurotypical lawyers as well, right? And that like engagement is the opposite end of the spectrum from burnout, right? Engagement is huge. And it will come as no surprise to you at this point that lawyers with ADHD are more sensitive to everything because we have no filter. And so we are more prone to burnout as well. Also, when we're talking in terms of strengths-based feedback, that type of constructive criticism reduces the chances of an ADHD lawyer shutting down from RSD, rejection sensitive dysphoria. So from a processing standpoint, just talking in terms of strengths rather than harping on weaknesses that we don't have as much of an ability to improve on works wonders. And then normalizing recalibration. What I mean by that is it's a euphemism for like destigmatizing failure, right? Because sometimes it's a, you know, things that we see as failure, especially as ADHDers, it's not failure. It's something has stopped working that's outside of our control. We're not lazy. We're not stupid. There's nothing wrong with us. I spent 40 years thinking there was something inherently wrong with me that I couldn't figure out. It's not a moral failing. But when we come up with a system that works for us, it can degrade by no fault of our own. Like degrade meaning it can stop working. But ADHD is always a moving target. My symptoms are different from day to day and throughout the day. And depending on what phase of life I'm in, like I had been pregnant a couple times, very different. I am in perimenopause now. OMG, I have to do so many different things. Medication changes. Medication is temporary. I only have a window of a few hours a day where I'm functioning in a certain way, right? So the fact that systems may or may not work forever, that's not a problem for the person with ADHD, like that they've done something wrong. So instead of going into that shame spiral of like, why isn't this working? It's because I'm lazy. Blah, blah. Instead, we want as like just as a workplace culture, because this happens to everybody, but particularly for those of us with ADHD, this is hard to do, but this is a worthwhile exercise. Developing awareness of when that system breakdown is happening, and you're probably going to go into the shame spiral for a minute, but developing the muscle of being like, okay, I'm shame spiraling because this has stopped working, and I'm assuming it's because I did something wrong. Let's come at this from a point. I want instead for us to come at it from a perspective of curiosity. And this is for the employee and the employer and everyone around. Like, you know, this system was working really well. What happened? You know, what happened? Sometimes it's like, oh, I just was on vacation and I didn't use my planner on vacation and now I came back. And I'm out of sync with it. I just need to start using my planner again. So that doesn't mean you need a new whole new system or a new planner or whatever. It's just like you just got to restart it. Or it's just like I thought this was going to work. It worked for a while, but then the novelty wore off. Or it's no longer fun and challenging or interesting. So I got to rejigger it. That is what is going to help us to keep people with ADHD, keep lawyers with ADHD functioning at their highest level rather than disengaging because they're afraid of getting in trouble and they're afraid they've done something wrong. So this is huge. It takes a lot of work, but this is something that if having a psychologically safe workplace where this kind of this kind of awareness can be developed. All right, I know we're at the hour mark. I promise we do not have much left. We have like 5 minutes left. So let's say once I talk about this, people will say to me, okay, so what if my workplace doesn't have that? Should I change jobs, or is every law firm like that? Am I going to need to, should I change something else entirely? So here are some signs of an ADHD friendly job, which is, a summary essentially of what we've talked about. But I also want you to maintain some curiosity here. Even if you don't see these things happening in your current workplace or a workplace that you're thinking about joining, you want to say, they may not, this, I may not be seeing this right now, but is this something that the employer or this culture is open to? Would they be open to these changes that I've just learned about, or open to conversations about these things? And so at least, give that a shot. If you've tried that, or if you know this stuff is a non-starter based on experience data that you have, okay, then you got it. You're gonna have to find another place to work, because working in a place that is not friendly to the ADHD brain is just, it's a recipe for burnout, self-loathing, all kinds of really awful things. So I don't need to go through all those. You can check those. And then signs of an ADHD unfriendly job. Shocking. It's basically the opposite of what is on the other slide, but it's like there's too much structure. It's like feels like a prison because of the micromanaging, or they don't give you enough structure, and so it's complete chaos, and you're flailing, and you're just overwhelmed all the time, right? So, and what the one that like no reasonable accommodations, like if you've asked for them, or if you know people who've asked for very reasonable accommodations that they've been denied, that yeah, I can see how that yeah, that you might want to find a new job for that. And being always on call, that's a huge one, because having a workplace culture that has an appreciation for rest is so important, because ADHD brains need more rest, like sleep and rest and time to recharge, than a neurotypical brain, because there's no filter. We're processing more all the time. And plus, we have this fear that we are lazy and we're doing things wrong and we're over-explaining and trying to overperform to make up for it. So we are wearing ourselves out. And so being always on call, we're going to hit burnout a lot faster. All right. So let's say you're like, the place where I currently am, or the place I thought about going, is not ADHD friendly. What types of jobs are ADHD friendly? Like, what if, what kind of careers should I even be a lawyer? Well, the short answer here to this is it depends. The key to ADHD job success is doing whatever works best for you, right? So there's this list here, but it's important that you understand what each of those things means for you. There is no one size fits all answer, because each person with ADHD is just as unique as their symptoms and their brains and their nervous systems. Just in the same way that, the neurotypical lawyers that I work with alongside my ADHD lawyers in the career coaching context. Some of these questions are only relevant to, or are necessary for people with ADHD, but they may also be core values of somebody who's neurotypical. So if you have ADHD, these are the keys that you will be wanting to look for in any kind of job. So they're basically hitting on the interest-based dopamine triggers, right, to get that nervous system motivated. But also places where whatever your ADHD traits are that are strengths are viewed as assets and are assets, like things that you can just lean into. That's what the job needs. That's going to be a really good fit for you. But also, you also need to have a reason, a sense of purpose for what you're doing. The ADHD brain has a really hard time doing things that it doesn't understand the reason why. Like following rules that don't make sense. I have a very hard time with that. That's why I could never work in big law. And this is a slide to come back to later. I put this in here more of a reference, but this is just to show you that people are successful because of their ADHD, not despite it. Okay. And that really became clear to me when I saw an interview done with Stephen Hawking, because he had ADHD. And they said, how did you become so successful while having ADHD. He's like, are you crazy? Like, ADHD is why I was so successful. I would follow my interests. Other scientists were like, that's not important. That's weird. Like, that's a waste of time. I'm going to focus on the stuff that I deem important. And he's like, but I just followed my interests and that led to all these new discoveries. Okay. So that's what worked for him. But business leaders like Bill Gates, Richard Branson, they have ADHD. Almost every inventor you can think of, ADHD. Lots of athletes, Simone Biles, Michael Phelps, Michael Jordan, and of course, tons and tons of creators. But lawyers fall into this twice exceptional category that I referenced earlier, where you've got ADHD and you're also a high achiever. Some people will use the word gifted. I don't really like that term. But also, you'll notice there's no lawyers listed on that. Not because there aren't super successful lawyers, it's because of the stigma. Yeah. Hopefully, I can share like a judge at some point. Can't wait. So, that said, here are popular careers for people who have ADHD, meaning you will find more than like the fair share of people within these professions who have ADHD. Entrepreneurs. Hey, I'm one now. If you own your law firm, you are an entrepreneur. If you're an entrepreneur, you are 800% more likely to have ADHD. It is arguably one of the best fitting professions for somebody with an ADHD brain. Not everyone, but it can be. Legal practice is extremely popular. Emergency medicine, because they're so good under pressure. Engineering is another one. The creative arts, for sure. Sales, doing things with your hands. Like, that's what I do when I'm approaching burnout in any way. I'm like, I'm going to go paint some walls. I'm going to go change some hardware on doors. Like, just there's something about that. Teaching and coaching. So, you see, I check like three boxes. I'm like entrepreneur, legal practice, and coaching and teaching. Yep, pretty popular for the ADHD brain. This again is just like a general reference because this is career coaching. I have a whole separate part of my business dedicated to that. This is how you find your job fit, whether you have ADHD or not. You have to figure out all the stuff we talked about before, meaning you have to figure out what you want to do. And then you go through this process, testing it out, being like, never mind, that's not what I want to do, going through again and again and figuring it out in a low stakes way. Don't quit your job and just jump into something. And if you're like, I don't know what I want to do, that's the hardest question. That's the hardest question. So here are some prompts for you. This is something that in my program, Make Your Next Move, that I use with my clients, they'll spend months here, and that is expected. It's hard sometimes. It's easier to say what you don't want to do, right? It's very easy for our brains to focus on the negative and be like, I don't want that, don't want that, don't want that. Well, what does that leave? What do you want to be targeting then? We're coming to the end. We're going to have a takeaway slide after this. But before we get into that, the biggest takeaway I want you to have from all this is that yes, you have learned so much about the ADHD brain, perhaps your ADHD brain, and how to help it to navigate law firm life and to help you to do your best work more often and with less stress. That said, this is complicated. Regulating an ADHD brain is extremely complicated, even when you have tons of knowledge. I have ADHD. One of my kids has ADHD. I am a certi I have an ADHD certification in coaching now. I don't have the secrets. It's just so hard on any given day to figure it out. So there's this razor thin zone of optimal stimulation. It's that trying to balance that light switch on the mid zone. And even then, it's not like it's going to give you the result you want. Okay, so just keep that in mind. This is why experimentation, iteration, recalibration, it's all, and persistence. Those are the names of the games we play with our ADHD brains. Okay, so here are the three takeaways that I'm hoping you have after going through this and perhaps going through the slides in the future when you need them. So, first of all, productivity strategies for ADHD lawyers must focus on interest-based motivation, not importance-based motivation, right? We know that things are important. That is not enough for an ADHD brain to get its dopamine delivery system in check. Okay. The second takeaway is that when it comes to advocating for yourself and requesting accommodations, you want to frame those in terms of what your ideal working conditions are. Like, I work best when, like, you know that about yourself, and what your strengths are. Those two things, when you put them together, and there are things that you're noticing that you need to add, modify, or remove, that is going to get you working, that leveraging your strengths and working at like your highest level more often. So focusing on that, not diagnoses, right? You don't even need to have a diagnosis to ask your workplace for some of these accommodations. And then the last takeaway is that knowing what to look for in an ADHD-friendly workplace, whether it's something that you have the ability to create or influence, or if you need to leave and find a place that is more ADHD friendly. See that they're open to like flexible work arrangements, in particular, not just in general, but the type of flexible work arrangement that would be helpful to you. See what they're see how ask them how they provide, you know, look at how they provide feedback. How do they feel? What are they, how do they deal with strengths and weaknesses? Do they give strength-based trainings and all that, you know, trying to figure that out, knowing how you get feedback in your current place. Do they focus on your strengths or are they harping on your weaknesses? And then ultimately, the ideal, there are more and more law firms that are like this, places that have an understanding of and an acceptance of how ADHD impacts work performance, communication styles, and individuals' well-being. There's more and more training and education going on. We have a long ways to go, but that is really an important first step. And there are many law firms, both ones that I work with and ones that I don't, where they are doing the work to create an ADHD-friendly workplace. And then here are some resources, things that I referenced, got my information from, and also things that you can reference for yourself going forward. I always get emails afterward about assessments, how to get assessed or treated. ADHDonline.com, that is where I got assessed, and I continue to get my treatment from them 5 years later. And then there's another thing you can do as well. So if there are, and I will take, stop sharing if there are any questions anybody has. Let's see.
It looks like we actually don't have any questions today, but I can direct anybody to your email if we do receive them throughout the day, if that's okay with you.
Absolutely. And I do, and I listen, I welcome emails. So if you do have questions, I have ADHD, so I may not get back to you right away, but I will definitely see your email and get back to you at some point.
All right, perfect. Then this concludes today's presentation. Thank you so much, Annie, for your time. This has been a lot of great information, and thank you to our audience. Have a great day, everybody.
Thanks so much.